Tax season has arrived, and doing taxes without the right help can feel overwhelming. Intuit TurboTax is here now to guide you through it with confidence. Match with a TurboTax full-service expert who handles everything for you from start to finish. Your dedicated expert checks every single deduction and credit to help you get the best possible outcome so you can feel confident you're getting every dollar you deserve. And the best part? You'll see real-time updates on your expert's progress right on your phone while you live your life. Plus, you get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax full service experts. Real-time updates only on iOS mobile app.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
If you love true crime and dark stories, then you'll love our other podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday.
He told them that in the year prior to Bundy's move to Utah, she had discovered objects that she couldn't understand in her house and in Bundy's apartment. These items included crutches and a meat cleaver that was never used for cooking.
Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts.
You know, then this guy gets rich and he has some issues with sexual addiction.
Yeah, and control.
Yeah.
The Keith Raniere story.
Dark Side of Wikipedia. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts and don't miss a single episode.
In some ways, it starts to make things like Jeffrey Dahmer and that look tame, not in terms of the brutality of what they performed, but in terms of the psychology and manipulation of people.
Dark Side of Wikipedia. Available wherever you download podcasts. Today on The Grave Talks, Life of Hauntings, a conversation with Kenneth Torres. Growing up, Kenneth Torres witnessed his grandmother practicing Santeria as a high priestess. He'd experienced unexplained happenings, visions, sights, sounds all around his home. In the second part of his childhood, he and his family would find themselves tormented night after night in another property, only to find out horrific events had cast a permanent stain on that home. This would set Kenneth on a mission to help those affected by the supernatural. This is his story today on The Grave Talks.
Wow, so looking back, essentially was my grandmother from my mother's side. I was born and raised in New York City, and my grandmother from my mother's side, she actually was a high priestess in Santeria, from Puerto Rico. And so I remember staying with her, and you know, just little things here and there that were happening that I would still remember even up until this day, that I would even, that I'm still questioning, was it real or was it fake? So, for example, there was one time that I remember being in my grandmother's room and then all of a sudden walking into the living room to my room, and I'm in like some type of other forest and I'm hearing some type of like Afro-Caribbean music playing in the background. So for me, as long as I can remember, that is when it first started for me.
How old were you at the time?
You know, I would say I was about 5 or 6 years old.
And you had an experience of walking from room to room and you were suddenly in a forest type setting. Is that, am I understanding correctly?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's what I remember. And even then coming back out and talking to my grandmother and be like, hey, what's going on? She goes, oh, it's okay. You'll understand one day.
Has that one day ever come yet, Kenneth?
No, you know, that day has not, it never came, yeah. You know, and the crazy thing is like, okay, you know, here I am, I'm going to be 37 years old. And I'm like, you know, was that my imagination? Did I have an active imagination, or was that stuff really happening? Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that it really did happen, but at the same time, I'm thinking, well, that might have been some sort of imagination. But I used to see my grandmother perform rituals, and people would come in, and you know what? It was kind of crazy. I've seen some stuff growing up.
I bet. Tell me about that. I mean, tell me about what you saw growing up, and then we'll talk about what, as you got older, what you later understood of what it was that she was practicing. Tell me about some of those experiences first as a child.
So, I mean, you know, growing up, watching my grandmother do these things, first of all, you know, having that experience of just going to one room to another and seeing that I was in a different location, that actually wasn't the first time. There were times that even with my aunt, God rest her soul, she used to take care of me as well. And we literally would go from one room to the other, and we'd be in a forest, like as I mentioned earlier. And then the second time we'd go back and we'd be somewhere else, like there's a river, like there's a running river in our living room. And we're like, okay, for me, that was some of the things that I saw, as well as too some of the ritualistic stuff that she did. You know, I did see her perform some rituals and incantations and conjuring. I did see her fortune telling. Also, there were things that didn't make any sense to me. For example, I would go put one thing in one place of the house, and then all of a sudden it'd be somewhere else. It wouldn't be there. And so as I got older, I started having these different types of experiences. That's pretty much as far as I can remember as a child. Mm-hmm. But as getting older, I mean, I've had some experiences too growing up in New Jersey as well.
When you had the experience of like a river running through your living room, what are you seeing? Are you seeing like the couch and the TV and there's a river between the two? Or are you like in a completely different setting, almost as if your eyes were closed and you were dreaming that you were in a forest and there's a river or something like that?
Honestly, Tony, plain as day. Plain as day. I am sitting there with my aunt and there's a TV and there's a couch, but there's a running river flowing through. And I could not explain that. And then I would go take a nap and mm-hmm. I would wake up and it would be gone. It was as if nothing ever happened.
And the people that you're asking, you know, to explain this are not saying, oh, you know, go take a nap. You're sleepy. You're seeing things. You're crazy. They're like, yeah, it's happening. You'll get it later.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much as far as I remember.
Yeah, wow. I mean, there's not a lot of sense to be made of it because they're confirming, yep, it's happening, but, you know, not really the whys or the hows.
Yeah, and you know, and for me at the same time, I think about it, you know, it could have been for me that it was probably a psychoactive imagination. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I've had some traumatic experiences growing up. So maybe those were some of the things that, you know, led to me having a psychoactive imagination. I'd like to believe that I really did see these things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, my mind is like, well, you know, could have been imagination as I got older.
as you did get older, tell me more about what you learned about, you know, what your grandmother was practicing with the Santeria. And also for our audience who may not know a lot about it or just kind of know bits and pieces here of what they've heard or, you know, whatnot. Explain the practice of what she was as a high priestess and Santeria itself.
So I understanding from Santeria, from what I've seen growing up, it's basically an Afro-Caribbean religion. It's a form of some type of Afro-Caribbean magic. It has correlations with voodoo, but Santeria is more on the Catholicism type of side. Mm-hmm. And so there are saints involved. There are different prayers to God, Yeshua, Yahweh. But at the same time, there's little sacrifices that you do. Obviously, some chickens are involved, a lot of sage, you know. So from what I know, that's kind of my understanding. I never really delved into that side because it did kind of scare me growing up. So, but as I'm getting older now, I'm looking more into these Afro-Caribbean religions and realizing that, you know, these are some of the things that I've seen. And so right now I am I'm reading some stuff that has to deal with some voodoo. Just actually picked up the book a few days ago. And so I don't have a full understanding on it yet to let the audience know what I fully know, because there are devout practitioners out there. So I would not want to offend them or give the wrong information out, you know.
And that's understandable. Are you aware, can it be used for good and bad? Can it be used in just one direction only? What typically do we see? Is it more so in the hands of the practitioner?
Well, you know, for me, my understanding and from what I've seen, it's more in the hands of the practitioner. See, I have this theory that magic is neither good or it's bad. I think it can be neutral, and I do think it depends on the person who is practicing the art and what their intentions are. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing for me, the obviously, it's the power of intention, how you use those abilities, how you use that magic, whether it be for good or for bad.
Sure. I mean, it can be used almost like a tool. Like you can take a hammer and you can secure a deck board and someone won't be tripping over the deck board. Or you can take that hammer to someone's head and that would not go well. And it's all a matter of how it's being used, essentially, is what I'm understanding.
Yes, sir.
So tell me more about, you had these experiences as a child. You had a grandmother who was actively practicing this. As a kid, are you talking to friends about any of these things? How are you kind of making sense of it? Your you know, structure system there at home sounds like it was, you know, affirming that these things are happening. But what are you understanding of this? Because this is probably not something that every kid in New York City is having going on in their home.
Yeah, you know, from my understanding of it, at that point in time, it was a limited understanding, because what ended up happening was my grandmother from my mother's side ended up passing. So then I ended up moving with my grandmother from my father's side. Mm-hmm. And so that was a different story, because she actually grew up Christian Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I, you know, move in with her, it's a whole different ordeal. It's a different lifestyle. It's, you know, praying and reading the Bible. And I would ask her about magic. And she would say, oh, no, the magic, it's the devil, it's evil. Mm-hmm. So throughout the years, for about 8 years, you know, I grew up in that Christian lifestyle. But I always knew I was different because I would actually find myself going to the bookstore, which was like maybe a few blocks down, and getting books on Gerald Gardner's magic and Wicca and looking at the occult. So I knew that there was more to it that I needed to know. I needed to understand what it was. Just that, you know, religious-based system from my other grandmother's side just wasn't cutting it for me. So that's when I started exploring more and started noticing, hey, there is a world out there full of magic, but nobody wants to talk about it because it's condemned. And so for many years, I actually suppressed that side of, you know, reaching out and learning about the occult or magic, because, you know, you're 12, 13 years old and, you know, your grandmother tells you got to do something. You know, I kind of had to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm. So you were really kind of getting yourself well-rounded in many of these occult topics, if you will. How did that journey continue as you grew and you wanted to learn more about it?
Well, you know, I just kept at it. And as I got older and I finally made it to the seventh or eighth grade, that's when I started exploring more of the magic side and started reading more about Wicca and Druidism. And so for me, I kind of felt like that was more for me because, you know, growing up in a system where at that time, old school Christian Pentecostal, everything is kind of like judgmental and it's kind of taboo. So practicing those things, I guess you would say it was more of a rebellious state that I was in, but I really did enjoy it. I made a lot of friends that I'm still friends with now. And that also led into many, many different things. I remember that I would start reading a book of some sort, and, you know, I would try to practice some of the candle magic in it, or I would try to start practicing the ritual side of things. And I And I'd see, for me at least, that it was working for me. You know, being a 14, 15-year-old kid in the South Bronx, you know, doing rituals, you know, trying to get some money for some potato chips, all of a sudden there's nothing, but in my backpack, I look, I get like $5 later, I go, whoa, hey, I guess this magic is working. You know, maybe it could have been my grandmother, but it probably could have been the magic as well.
I was just going to ask you, you know, when you're that age and you're kind of exploring things and seeking things out, you're looking for proof of you know, do these things work? You know, and some of them, if you are not familiar with them, are going to sound rather far-fetched. They're going to sound like, yeah, that sounds wonderful, but, you know, there's a chance in hell of that working. What exactly, you know, did you undertake that really kind of proved to you individually that there's something to this, that some of these things do, in fact, have, you know, a cause and effect? It's not just me saying some things out loud or doing some actions and then, you know, nothing happens. What did happen when you attempted some things?
There were a couple of things that I can remember. For example, I did do a ritualistic magic spell, candle magic, you know. So I wasn't the best looking kid growing up. You know, I had the braces, I had the glasses, and I think every young teenage boy wants that beautiful girl to pay attention to him.
Sure.
And so for me, I ended up doing some type of candle magic, and I was like, well, I hope that she likes me or whatever, and so I ended up doing it. And mind you, this is a classmate that, you know, we've gone throughout the grades for years, and she was kind of in the popular crowd, and all of a sudden I did this ritual, and 2 days later, hey, Ken, how are you doing? Let's go hang out. I'm like, what? Yeah, she's like, let's go get some pizza or something. And so we ended up hanging out, and we became really good friends. And up until to this day, you know, we're close on Facebook. And so for me, that was kind of, you know, the proving factor that, you know, magic did work, you know, in a sense, you know, being hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, that has to be an interesting thing. I mean, when you're doing something like that, and let's say it's something to the effect of, you know, making a girl like you when you're a teenager, or you had mentioned, you know, like $5 in your backpack, something like that. is there a trade-off, though, when you're doing something like that, you're, you know, kind of influencing whatever it is in the realm of possibilities and just kind of in our atmosphere and people and things and money and all that? Is there a price to be paid for essentially third party influence of some sort making some of these things come to fruition?
You know, I think there is always a price to pay when you do something like that, you know, whether it'd be, you know, sad or detrimental. But at that time, you know, I didn't really have a full understanding of, you know, what was to come or what the effects were. I just knew that, you know, I came from a broken home. I wasn't the best looking kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. And so I did this and it worked. The only thing that I could say that probably affected me was one of my good friends that we used to hang out with. The only thing that I can remember is that he ended up passing because he was hit by a vehicle as we were going to school. Mm-hmm. And I would tell him about these things. I would tell, Jason about these things. But as far as I can remember, that's probably the only price that I can remember paying.
And you don't look on that as, you know, being, do you look at it as being literally the price of what you were doing that this happened to him? Or was it just, you know, accidents happen to children?
Well, you know, I still think about that up until this day. And for me, it's kind of still, what do you call it? It's one of those things where I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
I do know that, you know, I did something. There were some intentions. He was a good friend of mine. I always told him about these different things. And, you know, this tragically happened. Maybe it was an accident. But I do remember after this happening, I got to the part of the book where it says, you know, whatever comes back to you, you know, there's whatever you do comes back to you threefold or sevenfold, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was kind of like, all right, well, yeah, that's probably what it was.
Does that mean that you, if you ask for something positive, you're going to get it back in the opposite, in negative? Or what exactly does it mean?
You know, for me, I think if you reach and your intentions are for something positive, potentially could get something positive back. But at that time, I was just too young, to understand what the consequences could be. And for me, going through a lot of different things, going through, hormone changes and being upset and having anger issues and, potentially just getting into arguments all the time, with other people around me. I think for me that probably was just a lesson to be learned.
Had you been using it for negative intent?
Well, I did. And that's one thing I did do as a young kid too. I was bullied a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I did use the magic. I would go and read a book and I would do things and say, I hope this guy, stops bullying me. And so nothing bad ever happened, but I do think that by me pushing out that negative energy out there, that bad intent, that was probably a consequence that happened to me and me losing my best friend growing up.
Sure. Sure. Did it, after having that experience and you, naturally having, some paranoia about that, wondering, am I to blame? Am I in any way an influence on what happened here? Did it slow you down at all in terms of your interest in the topic or practicing anything?
So it did slow me down from practicing the magic side. I completely just stopped the magic and doing the rituals and all that. I actually took my books and I threw them in a trash can. But I was still, having paranormal experiences growing up. There's a story that I'd like to tell you, if that's okay.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is back home in, we moved from New York to New Jersey. So we were living in Paterson, New Jersey. Paterson, New Jersey is known to, be filled with some paranormal activity because there actually is called the Great Falls out there. Alexander Hamilton actually discovered the city of Paterson, New Jersey. And so there are natural waterfalls that are running, that are going through the city. Mm-hmm. And so I've been told growing up, because of that, there's a lot of activity that's happened. So one time I went to go visit my dad. He was in an apartment, actually it was a home that was divided into two different sections. The first floor and then the hallway going up was the second floor. Mm-hmm. And I remember next to this apartment where my dad lived, there was a small little church. It's like one of those little churches that you would find, on a little ranch in New Mexico, maybe a little 10, 15 seater church. So going there. Sitting down in the living room, my dad and I, we are watching television. And my little sister is with me. And so we're watching television, we're watching something, and we see my little sister walk across the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And we're like, hey, sis, come back here. You're not supposed to be there. But then she goes, I'm right here. And we look down, she literally was in between my dad and I. And so when we go to the kitchen, my dad was Catholic, he's still Catholic. Mm-hmm. We go to the kitchen, we end up finding a crucifix turned upside down in the candle. So that was the very first experience that I had with that. So throughout the time, my parents lived there my dad lived there for about a year or so. There were certain things that would just happen. Things would end up missing. There would be foul orders, just things that didn't make sense. So one time we're outside, we're playing on our bikes, my little sister and I and my dad, and we look up. And so we look up at the window thinking that it was my stepmother. Well, it wasn't my stepmother. There was a little girl that was looking out the window. Mm-hmm. And so we saw that and we're like, whoa, that's kind of crazy. So my dad goes up and I go up. And all of a sudden, as soon as we enter into the house, so you walk into the house, so there's the kitchen, you make a right, the living room is right there. But the living room has a hallway that has stairs that goes up to the rooms. So as my dad is going up, my little sister's extra tricycle was thrown from the top floor and it almost hit my dad. like somebody just literally tossed it down the stairs. I mean, it hit him, but he was able to, you know, not get too injured.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the most craziest experiences that we had. So progressing through that, we're like, okay, well, there's got to be a logical explanation for this. You know, maybe the tricycle was, you know, at the top of the stairs and something happened and it fell down. But, you know, there was no way, because when you look at where the tricycle was, you go up the stairs, there's a little barrier on the side. Mm-hmm. The two rooms are there. You know, that extra tricycle was in my little sister's room. So how could it have made it through the room, around the corner, down the stairs?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was nuts. But also as well, you know, experiencing, you know, activity myself, I was walking up the stairs one day and I felt something push me. Literally, I felt something put their hands on my chest and I fell down the stairs. Luckily, you know, it was a short flight of stairs. I was halfway up, so I didn't get too injured. But, you know, when you're young, you kind of recover from those types of falls.
Sure.
But you want to hear the most craziest part, Tony?
Yeah.
So this is the most craziest part. So as this, you know, thing progresses, my little sister wakes up at night and she tells my dad and my stepmother and myself, there's a little girl that's coming out from under the bed. And we're like, what do you mean? There's a little girl that's coming out under the bed that's in a purple dress. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we're thinking maybe it's the imagination. But then my sister says, this little girl is telling me to kill you guys with a knife. And she's touching me and she's bothering me. And we pay no mind to it. I think at that time my parents were like, you know, she's 7, 8 years old. She probably has an active imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But then it progressed throughout the week. She would wake up crying in the middle of the night. She would have marks on her body. And we're like, wow, this is kind of crazy. But the worst part of it all was actually one night, my dad alleges that he heard a little girl talking to her. And so when he goes into the room to talk to my little sister, there is a knife on my little sister's bed. And so we're like, wow, this is crazy. This is intense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my little sister, she's sad. She's scared. She doesn't know what's going on. And even until this day, like, you know, I'll talk to her about it and she doesn't remember anything. So we got clergy. So we got the pastor that actually lived, that was the pastor of the church downstairs next door. And he said, yeah, you know what? We've had a lot of complaints about this place, about this home. A lot of paranormal activity supposedly was happening. There was a group of people who lived here and they were allegedly into the satanic, into the occult. And so just things happening. And so the priest came in and he started blessing the house. And as he's blessing the house, you can feel the tension in the air. You can feel that something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's praying for the house, and you know, we're downstairs. We see the chair, you know, the chair in the living room and the couches, they start rattling and shaking violently. The washing machine that was in the kitchen was shaking violently. The lights were going on and off. Things just started flying off the shelf. And so as this progressed, it just intensified. And as the priest went up the stairs, he alleges that he saw a black shadow, you know, demonic entity, so to speak. And from what he had said, as he was praying and blessing the house, he was saying, these little kids are mine. You'll never have them. And so he went through the house. He started praying. He started blessing. My little sister, you know, wasn't feeling good. She started vomiting and getting, you know, she was nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
She was vomiting. So the priest prays for her. And I don't think at that time she was, you know, possessed, but she was under some type of oppression. And so the priest prays for her. She starts throwing up. Her eyes turn black. I remember seeing this. Her eyes are turning black, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom. The atmosphere just feels better. So that was it with the blessing. So we're like, okay, it's good, you know. So we waited a few days. The priest came back. But what we didn't know is that in the closet area that was upstairs by the attic section, there was a little door. And so we opened that little door. It's kind of creepy, right? You're like, oh, there's a closet and then there's a door that leads into this little tiny space.
Yeah.
So we go into this area. My dad goes into this area. Tony, I kid you not, there was a little chest of pictures of little children, okay? Of little children. And, you know, this kind of hurts me to say. It was really sad because there were pictures of little kids and there were like little underwears of boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out, there was some stuff. We called the police department.
Yeah.
We called the police department and it turns out that was a key piece of evidence for the police department, because the couple that used to live there, Tony,
yeah,
they were sex trafficking children and raping them.
God. Wow.
Yes. Yes. So for me, Tony, that was when I knew that this was real.
Yeah.
That's when I focused my intentions on trying to help people. You know, that's when I put all that magic aside and said, you know what? This is real. I've experienced it. This is sad. And people are going through these types of experiences. You know, what can I do to help?
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older, I joined the military. I spent some time in the Marine Corps. You know, I traveled the world a little bit and I saw different things, you know, experienced different things, you know, experienced different cultures, which is great because, you know, the general assumption is that, you know, you can handle a paranormal case, a Western paranormal case, from an Asian side. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people have this big misconception that, let's say, for example, you're dealing with some type of Hindu demon or jinn or whatever it is, right? You can't have a Christian approach on it because that's not what that region of the world identifies as. You know, it's pretty much what that person identifies, whatever the religion or the culture is. That's how you have to approach these types of cases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important for a lot of researchers and investigators, you know, to know you have to approach the situation and always do research. Know that, you know, there's always going to be cultural differences. So by me being in the military and traveling, I was able to understand different cultures and how to approach these things. And I think it gave me a better understanding on how to become a paranormal researcher.
Sure. I want to talk a little bit more about that house. My question that I had initially was going to be, you know, do you know the history of the house or what's going on? But obviously you found out the history of the former residents who had been there with the evidence that you had found and just the deplorable actions that they were undertaking in that home. Beyond that, and I want to go back to that in a moment, did you ever learn any other history of the home beyond that horrible chapter in its life?
So I did not, learn more about the home, but I learned more about the area.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of Paterson, New Jersey, where I lived in, I used to go to high school there called John F. Kennedy. So John F. Kennedy Knights. So that high school allegedly was built on an ancient Indian burial ground, because New Jersey is predominantly, you know, there's a lot of Native American names out there in that part of, the country, you know, the Chippewa, the Arawak, the Miwok Indians.
Sure.
So a lot of that is, culturally connected. So that was the only thing I was able to find out, was that there was allegedly ancient Indian burial ground that was in that area, and that could have been the cause for it as well. But you know, at the same time too, I did grow up in a rough environment, and so that area also too, you know, a few blocks away was also known for heavy drug use, prostitution. So I think that maybe that kind of played a factor in what was happening in the environment.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Kenneth. In part two, did the former house owner's deplorable actions cause Kenneth's house to be infested with negative energy? How does someone eradicate a home of such negative energy after such dark, insane actions took place? What were some of the paranormal cases that Kenneth has been involved with working with the Warren Legacy Foundation? And how has Kenneth been involved with virtually helping those afflicted by the paranormal during the pandemic? All those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to all of our interviews, all of our archive of episodes, part one, part two, and advanced episodes of the show. And it's all commercial free. It helps keep us on the air and gives you loads of content. Again, patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. One in four honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the Million Dollar Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.